Mr. Gibson, Reel 5. Were you doing any training whilst you were there?
Oh, yes. We were still doing our rifle drill, and we were doing route marches. And we went out at night with compasses and tried to find our way back to camp.
And had you guns with you?
Not then, no.
So basically keeping fit and basic drill and this kind of thing?
Yes, yes.
Any particular parades or ceremonies that did you get involved in?
No, not there, no.
And you didn't get involved in riot control and this kind of thing?
No, everything seemed peaceful in Ahmednagar.
There would quite, presumably, you say it was a big camp, so other regiments would be there at the same time?
Yes, other regiments out of our division, yes.
What division were you attached to?
The 18th. Which was a Norfolk division, really. And the sign was a sort of windmill, cross sails of a windmill.
And a brigade, were you attached to a brigade within the division?
Yes, yes.
What number was that?
That's what I can't remember.
So coming down, again, what would be the immediate unit that you were attached to, other than the regiment, was...
I don't know that one.
Well, what else happened when you were there?
Not much, really.
How long were you there?
Well, on the 23rd, we went back to Bombay, back onto the dockside, to leave. And there, instead of the beautifully painted American ships, was this old ship called the Empress of Asia. While we were standing on the dockside waiting to board, our colonel went aboard. He was going to be in charge of troops on the ship, and he came back and said the ship was in such a terrible state he wouldn't take us aboard. And he refused until he was overruled by higher authority, and we were told that we had to go aboard. And it was a terrible ship.
What was particularly wrong with it?
Well, all the food, there were weevils and seemed dirty. And rusty, unpainted, dusty. Everything seemed wrong with it.
And was it crewed by Indian? Or?
No, they were... all British sailors, and as I'll tell you later, most of the firemen were from Liverpool. Of course, we set sail, joined a larger convoy without any American ships this time, and we sailed south again, and we headed for the Sunda Straits, which is a strait between Java and Sumatra. And it was on the 4th of February, while we were sailing through the Sunda Straits, I was right on the bow of the ship, the only person there. And I heard the noise of aircraft, and when I looked up, I saw these 27 Japanese planes. And of course, our ship, being the last one, the poorest one, was at the end of the convoy, and they used us for target practice. And actually, our Empress of Asia bounced up and down, and I watched spouts of water on either side. And all happened, we got buckled plates, and some of our lifeboats were ruined. That was on the 4th of February.
It must have been a terrifying experience to be under that.
Oh, well, it took me by surprise, really. And as I said, I always like to sleep on deck. And one morning I was awakened, and there was an English destroyer and an officer, probably the captain, shouting to our ship, saying, "Empress of Asia, get a move on, or we're leaving you." And off they went. So we were left on our own. on the 5th of February, the next day, the Japs came again. They bombed us repeatedly until they set us on fire. They couldn't put the fires out, and most of our lifeboats were ruined. Most of our regiment were crowded in the bow of the ship. The ship was ablaze. We could feel the heat from that. Our own ammunition was exploding, as well as the Japanese bombardment. And we were drifting into a minefield. And we wanted to lower the anchor. Of course, they did the necessary things to lower the anchor, and it was so rusted it wouldn't even go down. So we 125 lads took hold of a link each, and long lines of us hiked this anchor up and down until it freed itself from the rust and went down into the... Things got so bad that the colonel gathered us round and said, the captain tells us that Singapore is where that huge pall of smoke is, and it's probably anything from 8 to 12 miles to reach there. And he said, I want you to go overboard and swim towards that. Now, I was not a swimmer. I'd never been able to stand cold water to be able to learn to swim. And I'd read books about it, and I'd done land drills, so I knew the actions to take. And so we had to leave the ship.
Had you suffered casualties amongst your own unit on the ship during the action?
We were very lucky. A friend of mine standing next to me got hit in the leg. And we took a door off, laid him on the door, and the crew got ropes and we lowered him into the sea.
What was the panic?
No panic whatsoever. In fact, when I was about to go over, I looked back and our helmets were in a row and our boots were in rows.
You'd taken off to... Yeah. And the rest of the ship and its crew and were there other units on board?
Yes,
with you?
They were on the rear of the ship.
You must have heard the people being, well, you wouldn't hear them being killed, but the screams of the wounded, etc. Was that all in with the scene?
Well, I didn't hear them because the bombs landed amidship, and one of our officers was killed, Lieutenant Wilson. And another one, he was so badly burned he was blinded. And a few more had burns. But we managed to get them all off.
Terrible time. Faced with that water and having to get off it, I know you said that you'd done the land practice for swimming. It must have been still a tremendous step to put yourself into that water, knowing that you may or may not be able to swim.
Well, the first thing is, looking over the side of that huge ship, it was like looking over the bridge down into the river and knowing that you had to get down there. Luckily, there was one or two ropes, and I got down so far by rope and then had to leave and let myself go. I had this cork round my neck, and you had to put your hands in the cork, otherwise it would have come up and hit your chin and probably put you out. When I hit the water, that was where I got a pleasant surprise. I couldn't stand cold water. And I hit the water and thought, my goodness, the water is warm. So that was one good thing.
What were you wearing then?
I was wearing shirt, trousers, which had turnips on them, and socks. So I wanted to be as light as possible, and these things seemed to be dragging me back, so I pulled off my socks and my trousers so that I was left with only my shirt and that pay book in my shirt pocket. And the pall of smoke seemed a long, long way away. We had to start swimming for that.
Did the cork help to keep you on the surface?
The cork helped me up. But of course, I was told later that cork will only last for so long and it becomes too saturated.
Any friends alongside who were watching out for you?
No.
You could swim, of course.
There were many good swimmers and many were teaching others to swim. It was like a mother duck in front, you know. I can picture now Bomedy Laidlaw with about three or four in front of him saying, do that, do that.
Breaststroke. Yes. Again, any panic in the water from those that, like yourself,
no.
Afraid of?
And of course, with some of them being able to swim quite well, there was a time when I found that I was alone in the water. The sea's a big place. For all there were 1,000 of us to escape from the ship, you know. After a while, I felt as though I was just by myself.
Were you afraid?
Naturally, yes. But all kinds of thoughts came into your mind. Wondering about how my parents would feel if they could see me in this situation.
Did that reflection, that that memory of home and where you've been and your loved ones, did that push you forward?
That did, yes.
Mm-hmm. To give you the
yes.
energy.
I had to reach that smoke to get back to them, yes.
And as you're going along, I mean, it's I don't know how far did you swim? Did you make the shore?
Well, I didn't. No. I thought I wasn't making any headway until I turned on my back and looked back, and the Empress of Asia, I don't know whether it had drifted or whether I made some headway, but it was still ablaze there and smoking. And then I heard the sound of an engine. Everything seemed quiet, you know. And then I heard the sound of this engine and looked up, and there was a ship in the distance. Well, not a ship, a boat. And that renewed my efforts, and I made for that. And as I approached it, I could see that there were other people in the water beside me making for the same place.
Were there any bodies in the sea that you came across as you swam?
No. I was looking for a piece of floating timberwood, something to hang on to, but there was nothing. The ship hadn't blown apart, it was just burning, you see.
Amazing escape that you had.
Yes.
Considering, as I say, you couldn't swim. And you reached the boat, presumably?
Reached the boat, but you couldn't do anything about it. It was too high out of the water. And a face appeared over, and it was a friend of mine. Well, not a friend. His army number is 919804, and mine is 919805. For all I'd never known who he was previously, I now meet him every Thursday, and I take him to the Yasmi Club every month. He's 86 year old, and we still meet at least once a week. He leaned over and he said, "Look, I would like to help you, but I can't do a thing about it." All his hands were burnt. He said, "But I'll get someone to help you." And he came with two of the crew who had a stout rope. They lowered the rope down, and I sat in the loop of the rope, and they lifted me onto the deck.
And it's a British ship?
Australian, I think.
Mm-hmm. And you were gathering others out of the water, presumably,
yes,
at the same time?
Picked others out of the water. And do you know, it took us ages to reach Singapore. I mean, if I'd been left to swim there, it would have taken me a month or so.
It's been tremendous relief when you feel yourself hoisted onto the deck.
Terrific, yes. And then to find a lot of my friends there, all being treated for burns.
And had there been a lot of losses amongst your unit?
No. It was amazing to think that we'd only lost one officer. There were casualties, you know, and our BQMS Sheridan, he was blinded and badly burnt.
and picked up, as you say, the ship then sailed on for Singapore.
Yes. And we reached we reached the quayside in Singapore, and the Singaporeans must have seen what was happening in, or heard what was happening. And the WVS, or the equivalent of the WVS, had come down to greet us. And of course, most of them were Chinese ladies, beautifully dressed, of course, and Indian ladies in safari, in saris. And of course, I only had one shirt. And the wind around the quayside at Singapore is rather playful. So I had to sit on my shirt before I could have a cup of coffee.
And presumably you got a pair of trousers at some time, didn't you?
Yes, trucks came and took us away. And we were given a quick issue, one pair of pants, one vest, one etc. One pair of shoes, one pair of... So we were given the bare minimum and an old rifle each and so many rounds of ammunition.
That's... The Japanese would be close by then, I suppose.
The Japanese,
down.
Well, that smoke, they'd already been bombing Singapore, and they'd bombed us at sea, and as soon as we got on land, we were being bombed again all day long and every day.
So you got on land, as you say, and you had this wonderful welcome from these ladies, and then where did they place you?
Well, they placed us in some Chinese bungalows which had been vacated by people, you know, getting out of Singapore. We were there just for the day while we were issued with this basic equipment. And then our troop, the one troop out of the regiment, the whole regiment, were given four anti-tank guns. The rest of the regiment, with their rifles and their few rounds of ammunition, were sent to be infantry. And our four guns, we had to take them and put them in position. Our gun was sent to a place called Serangoon, and we went into position there. We had 300 rounds of ammunition. We didn't have a proper truck to tow the gun. It was a Chinese merchant truck with Chinese writing on the sides, and a piece of rope to tie the gun, which meant that the gun swayed from side to side while it was being towed. The 300 rounds of ammunition on there, and we had to sit on the ammunition.
2 pounder gun.
A 2 pounder gun.
So things were that desperate.
Yes.
Was there a lot of destruction around you when you?
Yes, you could see the results of the bombing. We were put in Serangoon, of course, our second day on the island. And what the very population of Singapore, and we were put there, we didn't know the difference between a Chinese and a Japanese. Not many people did. With the result, people were coming towards us, and we were aiming guns at them, and they would turn out to be friendly Chinese.
And was this the point when the Chinese had actually got to the land just across from the island? Had reached
the
point?
Japanese, yes.
Japanese, sorry.
They were just across the causeway, and some of them in boats were landing.
Did you get the chance to fire upon them?
No. Many times I had the gun ready to press my foot, and when they came, there would be a Chinese and not Japanese. Night time was the worst, because we knew that the Japanese were landing by boat from across the causeway, and we would hear voices. And I would leave the sergeant on the gun, and I would slip out with my rifle, all ready to fire, to go towards these voices. And find that either they were Chinese, or I wouldn't be able to find them, they would disappear. And then we learned that they had been Japanese, and we were surrounded. And we were given the order to get out quick. So all our 300 rounds of ammunition had to be put back on this Chinese truck. And we had to climb on board and break through down the road towards Singapore. I think our driver must have panicked. And he had his foot hard down on the accelerator and our gun was swinging from side to side. We were sitting on 300 rounds of ammunition bouncing up and down. And the fleeing population coming down the road, we were forcing a way through it and our guns swinging from side to side, nearly knocking them into the ditches.
It must have been a dreadful sight, as you say, panic-stricken civilians pouring down.
Yes, I felt sorry for them. Yeah. And then we went, the main road from Singapore up to the causeway is Bukit Timah Road, and our guns were put there to defend that road.
There'd be, as I say, almost chaotic situation. Mm-hmm. And you're trying, obviously, to maintain discipline. So, yeah. But you must have realised things were pretty desperate. Oh, where could you go?
Yes. Well, our four guns, how they did it, I don't know, but we put our truck with the ammunition into a garden while we went onto the main road with the gun. And a shell actually took the branches off a tree just above our ammunition. That was our gun. Across Bukit Timah Road, Sergeant Kirtley's gun, the same thing happened to them. Except that the top of the tree fell on that gun and Sergeant Kirtley says, I've got my camouflage now. Right? Sergeant Guy's gun, we could see him down the canal and he was in what was probably an allotment where they had these big pots with plants in. He'd hidden his gun in there. And systematically those pots were being demolished one by one, and we thought, that's Sergeant Guy's troop gone. And then when the bombardment was finished, Sergeant Guy put his hand up to say he was okay. They must have known each of our guns, where they were, and pinpointed their shelling.
And you couldn't retaliate, of course.
Couldn't see them.
What are they, what's it like to be under shelling that's as close as that?
Well, at Serangoon, we could hear the... That's just what it sounded like. And you could feel as though you could just put your hand up and catch them as they went by. And then you would hear the explosion a few seconds later.
So you're under shell fire. Is there a tendency to want to bury yourself down in the ground? Do you get that feeling?
Well, one or two wanted to get... There were big monsoon ditches. And we told those people who weren't on duty to get down in the monsoon ditches. I spent most of my time sitting on my gun, looking through the telescope, waiting, ready to press my foot down. And every time a vehicle came down, ready to fire on it, but had to wait and find out it was one of ours, you see. One truck did come down at breakneck speed and couldn't find out who it was, and then found out it crashed into the monsoon drain beside us and the driver died at the wheel. He was one of ours. Gunnar Thornton, who is probably the oldest man in our regiment, had his hat blown off his head. That was rifle fire, so they must have been near enough to spot us with rifles. So we had to keep our heads down. I had to keep my head behind my anti-tank gun shield.
Did you have any infantry around you? Any infantry
yes,
support?
Yes, the Sikhs, I think there was a Sikh regiment came up.
So you were defending that causeway, in effect, that causeway road?
The road, the Bukit Timah Road.
How long were you there?
Well, from arriving at Singapore on the 5th of February until the 15th of February was when the capitulation occurred.
And you still hadn't had the chance to fire your gun at anyone?
No. I'd sat there for hours, waiting and waiting, ready to press that lever that would send a shell out, and never happened.
Did you get opportunities to sleep and rest?
I don't think I slept all the time while you were on that.
So you must be pretty exhausted.
Oh, yes. I couldn't sleep. You see, all night long, whether it was the bamboo forests that were on fire or the Japanese were sending these firecrackers over, but all night long there was this crack, 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 crack. And then there were noise of the heavy shells coming across, and the boom as the heavy shells. Whether they were our people firing at them or them firing at us, I don't know, but this shelling went on and the heavy boom all night long.
And your chances to eat, did you have any rations?
We had tins of McConaughey's. Opened a tin of McConaughey's, and whether cold or hot, you just ate that.
And your morale at this time, and the spirit of the unit,
well,
was it good?
It was only our one troop, H troop, and we would wave to them, the other gun troop, and they would wave back to say they were okay.
Did you have any lines of communication with any headquarters at
no,
all?
No, no. Not like the field artillery.
Of course, as you say, it was only your troop, and the rest of the regiment were fighting as infantry.
That's right, yes.
And presumably the colonel would be with them.
The colonel was with the infantry.
Did you have an officer with you?
We had our troop officer with us.
Who was that again?
He was Lieutenant Kent. I don't think I ever saw much of him. No.
And were you in that position right up the time that...
The capitulation.
Capitulation.
Yes. And on the 15th, we were told to stop firing. It was a ceasefire. And we wanted to know what it was all about. And there was a gentleman with a red hat and plenty of red ribbons. And I learnt later, I think he was called Brigadier Moyer. And I had the temerity to go up to him and say, "Can you tell me what's happening, sir?" And he said, "Bombardier, I bloody well don't know."
And your feelings at that time must have been...
And that was when we saw Percival and the convoy go up and down the road there with the white flag.
And I say, a pretty desperate situation then.
It was terrible. And near to us, there were a little party of Malay volunteers led by a lieutenant. It was their equivalent of their territorial army, you see. That he'd worked in a bank in Singapore, and he thought the idea of giving up Singapore was... And he said, "We're going to fight on. Will you join us?" So I said, I was just about to say yes, when the Japanese tanks came down the road. It was too late then.